Well, good morning. I can't believe it's this time of year already again. Seems like it comes around quicker and quicker every year. But this is my probably favorite time to come up here and talk, just because it's the draft and it's what I love and it's where my passion lies. And we've been working really hard on this all year, and the guys upstairs and John and Mike, all of our scouts, wish I could list all their names. But we got a lot of people that work very hard on this year's draft, and our goal is to nail it. And feel like this is a very important one, like all are, but we're excited about the opportunity to add some really good players to our roster.
With this new helmet rule that's supposedly going to come out, it's very vague. How has that, or has it, changed your evaluation of defenders?
Well, I think with the college rules, targeting rule in place, it's kind of helped us already in terms of, you know, the days of Chuck Cecil are over, and, you know, those players are now trained and coached to tackle properly and tackle the way that this rule is kind of that's in place. So it really hasn't changed. You know, we feel the players that we're looking at right now in this year's draft, positions that you're talking about that would be related to, we don't see any issues. But once again, you know, the guys, we'll coach them properly. Coach Cutter, his staff, you know they're going to do their best to coach these guys properly, so to adhere to the rules. So, you know, player safety is the number one thing for us and for around the league. So we'll adhere to it, and the game will adjust.
Jason, how much do you think the quarterbacks that have been talked about early in the draft, how many of those do you think will go, and how much will that impact what is there for you at 7?
Well, it'll definitely impact the players that will be available. I wish I had a crystal ball and could tell you. You know, you hear a lot of different scenarios. This is the time of the year for scenarios and BS. And you got to sort through it, and nobody knows what, you know, those teams are actually going to do. There's a lot of misinformation out there. So it's our job to go through all the scenarios and to be prepared for every single one.
Would it surprise you if there were 4 quarterbacks taken ahead of your pick?
No, wouldn't. Wouldn't surprise me if 2 were taken. Wouldn't, you know, you got to go through a scenario where 0 are taken. So
right.
It's wouldn't surprise me, though, just because of the need of the position, a lot of teams, and the importance of that position.
Looking back to last year, would you say that misinformation that you just mentioned, did that have something to do with O.J. Howard falling so far?
Well, you know, there was a lot of mock drafts out there and a lot of reports out there in the media of all, you know, a bunch of teams in front of us wanting him. I don't know if it's the misinformation that led him to drop. I think it was just the fact that teams had higher priority needs.
All drafts are unpredictable, but this one seems a little more unpredictable. Does it feel that way, that this one's a little bit different than ones in the past?
A little bit, just because of the quarterbacks. And I'll be honest, that's what makes this a lot more fun for us, going through all these scenarios. I mean, that's the excitement of the draft. I remember as a kid watching it, listening to it, reading about it, and, you know, trying to guess who's going to go where. And now we're doing the same thing right now, going through all the scenarios.
Jason, this will be your 4th year with Dirk Cutter on staff, 3rd as head coach. Has he gotten more involved each year? Is he more involved this year in suggestions or watching tape? Or is it still kind of the same as it was when he was the offense coordinator?
Dirk's a grinder. Dirk, we can give Dirk a list of 200 guys to look at, and he's going to look at all 200. Even if you say, okay, here's X amount of guys, these are really the guys you should focus on, he's going to look at everybody. He's going to give his opinion. His involvement has been the same, which is, you know, he and I talk about a lot of different things every day. I think I find it very valuable. I think he's a good evaluator. So I'm lucky to have him as the head coach, because I think that he is a true asset to this process and to our staff.
Does it get easier working with him, having more and more experience with him in this process?
It does. Yeah, absolutely. Not that it was ever difficult whatsoever, but he knows the process inside and out that I like to operate under. And he's very respectful of it. And he, you know, we start to, you know, it's like a marriage. You start to kind of be able to read each other's minds a little bit.
Can you talk about Talk about the status of Sweezy and Dotson physically, and does that status affect your thinking about the offensive line going into the draft?
Yeah, JR is still rehabbing. Be unfair to put a timeline on that. I'm sure he's going to miss quite a bit of OTAs. Dotson, I think it's already been out there that, you know, he had a procedure done, which a lot of players do this time of year, and we're going to hold him out of OTAs. We expect him to be ready for training camp. We're not worried about either of them being able to get back in there once they're healthy and they don't have to relearn the playbook or anything like that. They're both professionals. They both take care of themselves. So, you know, you're always looking for offensive linemen to somehow upgrade, whether it's your back end depth or your starters, if there's one that's out there. But affect the draft, not necessarily. We do have one other injury of note. Kendall Beckwith, while I'm here, mentioned this. He was involved in a one car accident last week back home in Louisiana. He was a passenger in a car and had to have surgery on his ankle just Tuesday night or Tuesday afternoon. So right now it's unfair to give a timeline as well with him. We're very fortunate that it wasn't life-threatening for him or the passenger. Probably hold him. He'll be out of OTAs, and at training camp we'll have a better idea of how far along he is.
Is it possible he missed the start of the season with
it? Right now, yeah, everything's on the table. You know, I don't want to get into too many details right now, but yeah, there was a fracture.
Did you think when you started out in this job, all these drafts later, that this team would have the needs that it still has? I mean, a lot of people thought you'd get it, you know, after last year, all the expectations. I mean, does it take a little bit of a reset to say, you know, this is where we are, we still need this, this, and this?
You know, I think I've said this before, every team has needs. You know, if I talk to good friends from teams that either won the Super Bowl or came close to winning the Super Bowl, they think the sky's falling too. You know, I think every year you're going to have needs. You never go into a year saying, God, we are set at every position. We're fine. So it's relative to how big the need is. But, you know, I went into this job knowing that every year we're going to have holes that we're going to have to fill or that we're going to have to address.
Is it fair to say cornerback and running back are the biggest needs?
It's fair to say that those are two positions that, you know, that we would like to add some depth or quality to.
There's some folks out there that have these unwritten rules, although some people speak of them, about, you know, oh, you can't take a safety this high, or, oh, you need to wait until, you know, this pick for a cornerback. I mean, what do you – or even running backs, you hear that a lot too. I mean, what do you think about some of those unwritten rules, or do you think it's just really a case-by-case basis?
Well, I'd say that's why they're unwritten. And they're not, you know, put down, okay? I think it's a case by case. I think there's always outliers and exceptions to rules. You know, there's guidelines that you try to go by. Certain positions maybe you put a higher priority on, but just because you have a higher priority on whatever position it is doesn't necessarily mean you can just go pluck a player and he's going to be better than taking a player at a position that's a less priority in your team-building philosophy.
You guys were at number 7 4 years ago, and obviously did well to get Mike Evans. But Mike was the 6th non-quarterback taken. I mean, there's a chance you might be able to get the number 3 non-quarterback in this draft. How fortunate is that, and how well does that sync up position-wise with your needs at the top of the draft?
Well, I don't like picking at 7 just because it means it's a repercussion of what your season, the disappointment of the season before. But you know, with Mike Evans, it worked out, so hopefully it's a lucky number 7. You know, there are enough players there, if no quarterback went above us, that we would be very, very excited about if we stayed put.
Did the Eagles prove last year, Jason, among other things, that you can't have too many good D linemen, with the rotation and everything? And I ask that in terms of you've made a lot of moves at that position in the offseason. That doesn't necessarily mean you're not interested in adding a D lineman with a premium pick.
No, it doesn't. But I'm very excited about the guys we have. It's nice to see that we have at least 8 guys that you know, right now we feel we could go into a game with and could have either started or could start. And watching the Eagles last year, it was, you know, when we're evaluating Bo and Vinny, just to see that, you know, the rotation that they had, it was definitely a key to their success. We're fortunate to have those two.
Jason, you guys picked up Jameis's fifth-year option. Does that just give you guys a little bit more time as you work toward that extension? Is it just a no-brainer at this process? What's the situation with him as far as a contract goes? Do you have a timetable or time frame on when you want to get something done?
Well, that time will come. You know, whenever that time is, that'll come. I think right now it was a no-brainer for us. It's a kind of a formality, if you will. Just the same situation that all these other players in that draft were taken in the first round. I mean, most of them, I'm sure their option will be picked up. Some won't. But, you know, it tells you what we think about Jameis, and that we obviously have very he's exceeded his expectations, in my opinion. But we have plans for him in the long term, and when that time comes, we'll address that. But right now, there's no signs of anybody wanting Jameis to walk out of this building, so this is the first step in that.
Jason, in your scheme, is Minkah Fitzpatrick a safety? Is he a slot corner? What is he? Is it corner?
Well, you know, the thing about Minkah is he's played a lot of slot this year. He's played outside corner. And in that slot position, you can see some of the things that he'd do at safety. You know, he's a really, really smart guy. Versatility is, you know, is a great asset of his. We had a great visit with him, very professional. You can see why Coach Saban speaks so highly of him. There's a lot of versatility with him. It would, you know, we have a plan if he were the pick, what we'd do with it, what we'd do with him. We like the fact that he can do a lot of those things.
Affect a guy like Derwin James, where would you see him best fitting? Because, you know, you hear that he's also a guy that's versatile as a safety. He could play both strong and free.
Yeah, he's a very good safety. Same thing. All these players, I don't want to make it sound like we're you know, tell you guys who we're zeroing in on, but all these players we have to have a plan with. He's also a versatile guy that he's more of a strong safety, but, you know, he can drop down in your sub packages and play linebacker. You know, he's another good player.
Jason, I think you mentioned in the past, okay, you're at number seven. You could possibly even trade down and get more picks. Is there any possibility you would actually go up higher, maybe a Saquon Barkley or somebody that you really want? Is that a possibility? Or?
You know, I don't want to leave anything or take anything off the table. That it's, you know, we still have a week here. There's always scenarios where you never know what's going to present itself, and there could be an opportunity to do something that you feel good about moving up. So all options are still on the table.
I know you're glad Beckwith wasn't injured more than he was, but the prospect of him missing the start of the season, do you feel pretty good about the depth you have maybe at that position anywhere? You had to get by with some guys last year that were injured.
Yeah, we feel good that we have a Darius. Bond was playing well, starting to come along last year. Darius played really well when he had to fill in, and he's a very versatile guy as well. So, you know, there could be some guys out there in this year's draft too. You know, we feel good about those guys. That's why we signed a Darius back for situations like these.
Jason, last year proved that, you know, sometimes you can find a running back of immediate impact beyond the first round. Was that an anomaly, or is there a big drop-off after the top running back that you have rated in this draft to the next guy? Or is there good depth at that position?
I'd say there's good depth at that position. There's always a relative drop-off when you have guys ranked, and that's why you have them ranked. But, you know, there's good depth, and there's running backs scattered throughout the draft that we feel could help us. And with that said, you know, the talk of running back comes up a lot, but, you know, we do like Peyton Barber, and we do like what Peyton brings to the table as a big guy that, you know, can grind it out in your 4-minute offense. And also, you know, when he was given the opportunity, he played pretty well. And really, he's still young and on the rise.
You've been through a few of these drafts now as general manager. What do you remember most about your first draft and just that whole process and maybe some of the lessons you learned from it?
Well, first draft, taking Mike Evans would be the most memorable. I remember being on the phone and right before our pick being offered a fairly high significant pick to come up not too far wouldn't have to drop back very far and having to make a decision with everybody staring at me and hanging up the phone and saying no and taking Mike. And I'm glad we did that.
Four drafts in. What letter grade would you give your draft record and why?
You know, I'm not going to evaluate myself. That's not my job. So I'll give my staff an A.
Jason, as far as this year and potentially trading down, can you give a rough number of how many teams have already called you about serious calls about that number seven pick?
That's a tough question because I don't know which, like I said, there's a lot of BS going around now. So you don't know which ones are serious and which ones aren't. So we'll figure that out soon. But, you know, this time of year that we call each other and feel each other out, if, you know, there might be an opportunity, would you be willing, or depending on who's on the board, all those types of things. There's a lot of different factors that are involved. But, you know, the phone's ringing quite a bit, but I don't want to say that they're all serious phone calls.
That first year, what other lessons have you learned from some of these drafts?
Well, you know, if there's a player that you really like and you feel very, very confident in, you shouldn't hesitate to take the player. And sometimes getting cute, moving back can cost, you know, it kind of goes back to how are you going to feel at night when you go after the first day, after the second day. Are you going to feel good, or are you going to feel bad that you passed an opportunity to take a guy that you really liked? So, you know, lessons, you learn lessons every year. Sometimes you can fall in love with a player too much, too, and mortgage your future and give up picks. We haven't done that yet, but I've restrained from doing that. So maybe, you know, lessons, there's a lot of them. There's too many probably to mention, but you learn every year. You grow, try to get better.
Uncertainty at the top of the draft make it more difficult to have those discussions about potential trades, or does it maybe even give you a little more leverage?
Well, it depends on who's going to be there. You have to go through a ton of scenarios. I don't want to say more difficult, but just, you know, sometimes in drafts like these where there is uncertainty, like you said, you have to wait until draft day and be ready for any call that could come.
Jason, you've had a lot of success with two guys in the last three drafts out of State. Is there anything from that specific to that program that you like as far as the players coming out?
Well, you know, I'm not saying that other schools, I'm not trying to say that other schools aren't developing good players, but Penn State does have a pretty good track record of just, you know, well coached. They're in an area of the country that's kind of its own state up there, and football is everything. And, you know, they're typically very passionate guys that love the game. And, you know, you come from a program that's well coached there, Franklin and Bill O'Brien before him. You know, the guys, it's usually an easier transition. So we've had easy transitions with those players.
I know there are needs every year, but how close do you think this team is to breaking through?
Last year, there's no sugarcoating the disappointment. I feel like we were a much better team than our record suggested, and we've talked over and over about the close games that we were in and the ones that we couldn't find a way to finish. I feel like we've added some really quality players that have been in those situations. Not that that's always the answer, but I love this locker room. I love the heartbeat of this locker room. I love the vibe, and I think we're a lot closer than some people think. I think we have a chance to do something really good.
Is that the difference maker in those close one score games? Not so much what plays you call, but the character of the guys in the locker room, the resilience of those guys. I know you talked about that.
I think anytime you can add great character guys, it's going to help you. But I think the experience of going through that, you know, personally, I like guys that hate to lose more than they love to win. So I think I think that's the mentality I kind of can sense throughout this building.
Jason, when the schedule comes out tonight, and it's become quite a big production, is that more for the fans, or do you guys get just as excited when you see that schedule set in stone?
Oh, yeah. I mean, very intrigued with the schedule, and then you start playing the game. Here's this team. They didn't do well last year. You can kind of throw that out the window. It never goes like you think it's going to go. But I like to see who we're playing, when do we have a stretch of home games, when is the bye, Are we playing on national TV and against who and when? It's, you know, the fan in me comes out when I see it. So, yeah, I'm excited to see it.
Your experience, Jason, in personnel over the years, the picks that don't make it, Jason, especially the premium picks that don't make it, is there a common denominator, pretty general in your mind in terms of, the guy wasn't as talented as we thought, or attitude comes into play and the guy didn't love football or something? You know?
Do a lot of self-scouting and a lot of studies on guys that didn't make it, not just with our own team, but with every team. And, you know, sometimes it can come down to the location of the team or the environment where he's at. And a guy that's been on the West Coast going to the East Coast, he's not really equipped to be that far away from his family. Not all players are like that. Some players want to get away from their family. So, I've said it time and time again, most of the time it comes down to the mentality, the passion, the work ethic, the drive. And those are things that get missed.
So the draft has been in place for decades. How come it's so hard? Why has no one really figured this out yet? I mean, it's got to feel like a lottery, right?
Yeah, I mean, first round, 50%, you know, second round, about the same. So that's a good question. Trust me, we do a lot of research and studying and try to come up with that. We're not unlike any other team, trying to find that magic solution to be able to look into the mind and soul of a player. If I could figure it out, or somebody can figure it out, they'd make a lot of money.
You mentioned that during player interviews, especially at the combine, these guys are so coached up that you're better off getting intel about their opponents than themselves. So when you bring guys in for your private interviews, your 30 private interviews, ballpark percentage, how much are you picking their brain about anything but them?
I can't give you a percentage. Of course, we ask them about their teammates. I would say most of them, they're not going to throw their teammates under the bus. So I know I probably wouldn't. It's a little bit living in a little bit of a fantasy world if you think that just bringing a guy in to talk to him about a teammate would give you a whole lot of depth. Sometimes it works. Sometimes you get some good stuff. It's more trying to catch these guys off guard. The interview, that 15-minute interview, is just one small slice of the whole thing that we're doing. I mean, we meet with them informally, too. We go meet with them at their pro day. We bring them in here for a full day, and we put every guy that we bring in here through the same exact process from the time he lands till the time we take him back to the airport. So we get a lot more out of those full-day visits than we do the 15 minutes.
You mentioned several times about the BS that's sort of out there, and the draft is kind of liar's poker. How do you sort through it? Are there guys you trust in the league, and how much do you engage in it?
even...
Sign examples if you want me to.
My job here is to make the best decisions possible for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And it's not to help a buddy out somewhere else, or it's not to, you know, do what's best for them. So, you know, I'm not saying I would ever lie, but, you know, sometimes you don't need to answer questions. We talk occasionally, different guys. I'm friendly with all, you know, 31 other GMs are top of the head of personnel department. So it's sometimes you get something out of it. Sometimes you don't, but we're all at the same time. We're all guessing what's going to happen in the draft.
You read Sean Payton in Monday Morning Quarterback talking about how those top echelon quarterbacks just aren't Carson Wentz, and you'd be very careful, but you know that he's after a quarterback. Do you take that with a grain of salt and say, yeah, maybe he'd like to see one of those guys fall to him at 26?
Well, so that might be his opinion. So he's been in this for a long time. He's a real sharp guy. So,
Jason, as you go at 7, you have a reasonable amount of picks in front of you. How often do you guys play out those first 6 picks? Just to run through all the 4 quarterback scenario, the no quarterback scenario. How often do you guys just play that out?
quite a bit. I was doing it a couple times today before I came down here. So. Often.
Jason, there hasn't been any reported visits of you guys bringing in Saquon Barkley. If you haven't, is that because he's kind of checked all the boxes? You've got the tape. I know that you guys probably had some time in Indianapolis with him, but just talk about him and what your opinion is of Barkley, and have you had a visit with him? Or if you can,
we have. We had him in, so there's some news for you. We don't broadcast everybody we bring in, but you know, he's a great player. Everybody I know that's not even working in football knows that he's a great player. He's a great kid, checks all those boxes. But he's not the only great player in this draft.
Okay. Jason, you talked about just the natural crapshoot of the draft, especially as it goes on. You guys have had great success after the draft in identifying guys that don't get drafted. The last three rounds haven't necessarily gone as well. Is there something you point to for why both have happened for you in your 4 years?
You know, not really. Some of those players that we've drafted have gone on and made other rosters. Those late round picks, you know, there's a very small percentage chance that they're going to make it. Of course, every time we make one, we don't say that. You know, we're going to take this guy. He doesn't have a very good chance to make the team, of course. But, you know, there's been some, you have to make a call. There's been some of these undrafted guys like Anthony Alclair last year came very close to drafting. So we just thought that there was a better, good chance that we could get him as a free agent and we could get another guy drafted in the seventh round, Stevie, and get both of them. So, I can't really tell you why that hasn't worked out that way. We're working endlessly to try to fix that and try to find more diamonds in the rough down there. Of course, I'd love to. You always hear about the ones that do make it. You know, I was part of a scouting staff where we drafted Julian Edelman in the seventh round. So, you know, that one worked. But then there, for every one that works, there's 100 that don't.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Jason, appreciate it.